is obviously known for being a radical critic of capitalism, famous for unpacking how inherently unequal and unfair capitalism was, something that's built on the exploitation of the majority by the few. I think something really crucial and understated that Marx did wasn't just critique capitalism, but through his observations of class struggle, of revolution, and his own political insights, he left behind a coherent framework that can understand the world and how to change it. And I think that is the only framework that has been able to explain how the world actually works and how to change it. For centuries, people have been debating about the best means to change the world for the better. Many of the starting points of these debates have been frameworks that can't grasp how society functions and were therefore limited in how effective they could be. And liberalism, I think, is one such political framework, and it's been utilised in the fight for progressive change, but is ultimately unhelpful, I think, in realising that fight. Liberalism was established as the dominant ideology under capitalism and became enmeshed into common sense. It shaped how most people organically view and understand the world. The dominance of liberalism has constant effects on the left and how people conceive of progressive politics. Liberalism is a framework that, because of its dominance and its hegemony under capitalism, ultimately impacts and I think hinders the left, and I want to explain why that is and why Marxism is a challenge and alternative to that. So I want to start by talking more about liberalism generally, liberalism as a political philosophy, take you back through a bit of history. Liberalism is the dominant ideological framework under capitalism. And I think unpacking some of its history will help explain the effects of liberalism on class politics today. So liberalism could be defined as a political philosophy that is based on the promotion and defense of individual rights and liberties. Depending on who you are and you know your political background, that might be very illuminating or it might mean absolutely nothing to you, and that's fine, because I think saying that definition by itself doesn't really tell you that much, because to really unpack it, you need to look at where liberalism came from and what its purpose was. So broadly speaking, liberalism emerged out of developments in the Enlightenment, the Age of Enlightenment being a famous period of pioneering scientific and philosophical advancement that saw new critical thinkers rebuff the social restraints of feudalism. They forged groundbreaking ideas of individual liberty, rationality and science, human rights, and equality before the law. Marxists and others see the Enlightenment as part of the turbulent transition from feudalism to capitalism, right? Feudalism being the economic system before capitalism, right? Think kings, queens, Game of Thrones, all of that, in which peasant production is exploited under the rule of a monarchy. And so the Enlightenment wasn't just some natural progression towards favoring science and reason, it was the outgrowth of contradictions inside feudalism. Namely, that a growing mercantile and young capitalist class cropping up around the edges of feudalism couldn't freely pursue economic growth under the political restraint of feudalism's monarchies. This burgeoning capitalist class had to rationalise and justify a new social order in order to wage war against the old feudal order. Ideas about reason and rationality, progress and individual rights that had grown throughout the Enlightenment became consolidated into the political philosophy of liberalism. For a better sense of the integral connection between liberalism and capitalism, just look at some of the key works in the history of liberal philosophy and what they say about capitalism. So John Locke, famous philosopher, in 1689 published two treaties of government, which made the case that humans are naturally free and equal, a direct challenge to the idea that people should live under a religiously ordained feudal hierarchy. It argued for a separation of church and state, an attack on the economic and political power of the church, and it said that individuals were endowed with human rights, a key one being the right to private property. Jean-Jacques Rousseau, another famous philosopher, famous publisher of The Social Contract, that also argued that humans are naturally free and equal citizens, and that political institutions need to be built which protect individual freedom. And it can seem common sense today to say that society is made up of individuals. Surely, obviously, it's made up of individuals. You know, we're all here just an aggregate of individuals, and we make up society. But individualism didn't really make common sense until capitalism. Under feudalism, individual rights were anathema. What determined your fate wasn't your individualism, your individual rights, but it was your position in a predetermined feudal hierarchy. And if you were a regent, your individual rights didn't matter, you were subsumed to the monarchy. If you're a soldier, you're subsumed to the army, and peasants obviously don't have individual rights, they had inescapable subordination and a duty to produce. You weren't born to be a flourishing human being, there was no notion of the thing. Limitations about who you could be were set at birth. Capitalism promoted the idea of individual liberty in opposition to the stifling hierarchy and immobility of feudalism. It was crucial to promoting the freedom of emerging capitalism to construct a free market and to build political structures that would take power from the hands of a monarchy and give it to those who owned property. Liberalism was an ideology there to not only attack the old feudal order, but to justify capitalism and build a political movement in its defense. Just look at documents of revolution, a bourgeois revolution, right? Like the Declaration of the Rights of Man from the French Revolution, which said men are born and remain free, and the aim of all political association is the preservation of the natural and imprescriptible rights of man. Or most famously, the American Revolution and its Declaration of Independence, which opens with, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." But of course, these words are one thing, and the reality is another. The capitalist class and its political backers were building a political structure that favored the ruling class, right? Not every individual. The language of universality, of human rights, of equality, helped then and continues today to mask the class divide under capitalism. In revolutionary America, there is, of course, no right to liberty for black slaves that were building the American economy, no equality for women, and no right to pursue happiness for displaced and massacred Native Americans, which is another key part of liberalism as an ideology. It was a political framework that was used to bring capitalism into existence, and it was and still is used to make capitalism seem fair, natural, and justified. It's political philosophy built on obscuring the class divide under capitalism. Another way liberalism does this is by separating economics and politics. Liberal capitalism argued that a rational political structure built over society under the best kind of democracy can protect everyone's interests. These are the kind of ideas that continue today, where we're told that voting in bourgeois elections is the pinnacle of democracy. Bourgeois liberalism pretends the economy is separate from politics, that the economy can be rationally controlled through political leadership. But this obscures that the economy is the key determinant over people's lives. What gets produced, who gets access to it, is at the basis of people's lives. And those decisions remain in the hands of the minority capitalist class. Upholding this idea that everyone is politically equal is liberalism's claim that society is just made up of individuals. Looking at the face of things under capitalism, people do enter society as individuals. There's a free market that sits over and above society, and anyone can enter that and trade on it. Your success in life isn't determined when you're born, but can be shaped by your individual effort, your work, your temerity. And you go through school being set up on an individual path to your individual future, entering the economy as one in a sea of many. And so liberalism normalizes the idea that what makes society function are the actions, choices, and ideas of individuals. Liberalism has stuck around as the key ideological framework under capitalism. It's how the world is explained to us and justified, and it mystifies the world instead of making it clearer. Because liberalism is the default and seemingly logical set of ideas capitalism provides us with, it's unsurprising that it shapes the ideas of those who want to challenge capitalism. So from here, I want to examine how liberalism and its emphasis on the individual shape approaches to left-wing politics today and make the case for a Marxist alternative. So one of the key tenets of liberalism is ideas. If society is politically constituted of individuals, then the political constitution of individuals are their ideas. If individuals are the key political agent, ideas are their fuel to act. It's what people think they seem to be the key thing that makes change in the world. As another influential liberal philosopher, Immanuel Kant, wrote, "Once man's inclination and the vocation to think freely has developed, it generally reacts upon the mentality of the people, who thus become increasingly able to act freely." In other words, changing people's ideas is seen as a precursor to changing reality. This is a common liberal refrain, and it can seem to make sense. Ideas, the wrong ideas, are often seen as the cause of injustice, and the right ideas as the solution. Ideas are there to be passed around and spread, and through convincing, shifting positions, opinions, action can be made. Ideas are given such primacy that they are seen to underpin the most fundamental decisions of our society. What gets produced, how things get distributed, who's advantaged, who's disadvantaged, who's oppressed. It's often seen as a result of bad ideas and incorrect policy, or if not bad ideas, a lack of moral fiber, a lack of ethics, a lack of the right values. For instance, an injustice exists, like racism. Racism could be seen to exist because individuals have developed reactionary ideas about race. From the slave owners of 17th century America to politicians who scapegoat migrants today, there are backwards ideas in their minds that make them think discrimination and oppression based on race is okay. Liberal critics of capitalism don't accept that capitalism has created a prosperous, democratic, or fair society. But fixing these failings is seen to come through individuals with the right ideas and the spread of better ideas through education. This connects to liberalism's fundamental ideas of society being a collection of rational individuals, and when these are effectively organized through democratic political structures, rational decisions and progress can be made. Another way that liberalism's idealism, I think, is reflected is in the strategy of getting individual progressives into positions of power and influence, whether it be progressive politicians or lawyers, bureaucrats, advocates on a board, that they can bring their ideas, their ideals into these positions of power, and that if those in power seem to have outdated and incorrect ideas, we just need to get people with the right ideas in there, and that will be a forward step. This notion that ideas are the fundamental thing that shapes society, which is part of liberalism, is idealism, and it's something that Marx thoroughly critiques. Instead, Marxists are materialists. We maintain that it's the material economic structure of society that fundamentally determines and shapes things, and that people's ideas are a product of that society. Marx said that idealists only reckon with imagined activity of imagined subjects, whereas Marxism starts out from the real premises and does not abandon them for a moment. Its premises are human beings, not in any fantastic isolation and rigidity, but in their actual empirically perceptible process of development under definite conditions. I think what Marx meant by that is that he's talking about how it's the real economic structure of society, or in other words, what gets produced and how, that is fundamentally shaping society. It's material reality that comes first, and ideas come later. So capitalism was born under the verbiage of equality and liberty, but what it really created was an economic dictatorship greater than any that had come before. Under capitalism, the vast majority of the population are the working class, those who don't have any control or ownership over how things are produced. The only thing they have is their ability to labour, and are therefore compelled to sell their labour to capitalists for a wage, or else face poverty or starvation. And the class that emerged in opposition to the working class is the capitalist class. This minority class, that has become many times wealthier and more exclusive than in Marx's day, gets to decide what gets produced and how it's distributed, and they rely on the labour and exploitation of workers to accumulate profits. And capitalists don't continue to exploit the working class and the world's natural resources just because they're morally corrupt and committed to greed. They have a material interest in maintaining their class position, and that position is built off the exploitation of workers. Similarly, politicians and the ruling class are materially tied to the fortunes of their country's capitalists, and so have a material interest in defending capital over the oppressed and the working class. Another common way that idealism is reflected in liberalism is seeing that education is one of the most important tasks for progressives today. Obviously, learning about the world and education is important for us in Socialist Alternative, or else we wouldn't be putting on a festival that's talking about anti-capitalist ideas. But where Marxists see ideas in education as one tool in our arsenal to fight capitalism, liberalism often raises this to the be-all and end-all. But putting education before everything else doesn't help challenge capitalist oppression, and actually capitalism is getting on increasingly fine with it. Self-education, being central to targeting injustice, is becoming well integrated into the functioning of capitalism. A writer and professional diversity trainer called Robin DiAngelo released a book called White Fragility. The fragility in question is supposedly the inherent defensiveness of all white people to take on racism. DiAngelo's argument turns the social injustice of racism into an individualized problem and something that is supposed to be ameliorated by getting the correct anti-racist training from professionals like herself for a hefty fee. Diversity training is standard in many institutions and enterprises today, And in practice, this is just a means for capitalist bosses to give themselves a progressive sheen and put the blame for racism's existence on regular employees. Educational seminars about racism and other forms of oppression ran by consultants and bureaucrats are not a solution to the structural discrimination of people of colour. There are some who might see their forms of education and knowledge spreading as more grassroots, more anti-corporate and radical than D'Angelo's. But even if you're not sitting in a corporate boardroom, a myopic focus on the spread of ideas and language about injustice at an interpersonal level, and that being a prerequisite to political activity, if any, is debilitating and isolating. Without challenging the power and structures of capitalism, just talking and thinking about injustice and using a politically ineffective framework to do so won't improve the lives of the oppressed. Liberalism is an outlook that sees the individual as the key political component. Seeing individual ideas as the key to changing society is one way this affects left-wing people today. And a connected outlook is that it's individual action in what I do as an individual that's key to changing the world. So, for example, that I as an individual should donate to a charity, be part of an NGO, whether it be donating to them, working for them, starting your own. And this can appear a more practical initiative than talking about ideas, but I think it's still ultimately idealistic and ineffective. For these charities and NGOs to work, individuals have to be convinced to donate money, resources, and time, and it's through convincing people at an individual level that people are persuaded to make these bureaucracies work. But no charity, no NGO, and no mutual aid network is able to get to the core of what's creating these problems of inequality and oppression in the first place under capitalism. Another popular way that individuals can be seen to make change themselves is through what might be termed lifestyle choices. The individual decisions that you make about how you live your life are seen to have a meaningful effect on social injustice. For instance, individual consumption choices to do with what you eat, you consume, you buy, like seeing veganism as an environmental solution, or buying ethically made clothes to mitigate against the exploitation of sweatshop garment workers. A key issue is that these individual choices do nothing to impact what creates these problems in the first place. As alluded to earlier, the decisions over what gets made and how it gets produced is in the hands of the ruling class under capitalism. You might choose what you buy from the supermarket, but that won't stop the government greenlighting more coal mine projects. Not to mention that companies have diversified their outputs to offer ethical and regular products, all coming under the same manufacturer. Apart from being logistically ineffectual, I think there's a further debilitating political impact that comes with a focus on individual action, which is the idea that it's individual action and individual responsibility that's central to understanding social issues. This helps turn social issues created by the imbalance in class power, things like poverty, like racism, like environmental destruction, turns these things into issues that every individual supposedly has equal and meaningful ability to change. This helps put those who are to blame, the capitalist class, out of the firing line and can keep left-wing people focused on their own personal decisions and actions of individuals they know. Individualized activity, whether it be an obsession with ideas, a commitment to charity, to personal and ethical decision making, has no effect on the structures and processes of capitalism. Decisions about how society works aren't made by individual moral choices, but in the context of the material compulsion of the ruling class to maintain profitability and class dominance. Liberalism can refer to class, and the most left-wing types often do. Usually by referring to classism, right? That the working class is poor, is disadvantaged, and they're another example of an oppressed group under capitalism. But for Marxists, class isn't just about classism, and it's not just an additional injustice in a list of many. The oppression of the working class is a foundation of capitalism and a contradiction of it that encapsulates capitalism's potential overthrow. The working class make the whole system of capitalism function. They're the ones laboring in the workplaces around the world that make any value for the bosses. And the economic advancement of the parasitic ruling minority comes from the labor of the working class. Capitalism creates an inescapable antagonism between the working class and the capitalist class. And Marxism is a political philosophy that unpacked the core workings of capitalism to reveal that this working class has the ability and the interest to create a democratic and liberated society. the ability of the working class to combat capitalism is found in its potential social power. This is a social power that's realised every time there's a strike. Time and again, the working class recognise this when they go on strike. They know that strikes put economic pressure on the bosses and on the governments reliant on them. Workers don't just have social power, they have a collective interest. The social power the working class has to impede the functioning of the capitalist economy and restart it under their own terms can only be done collectively. Workers can't individually parcel out the economy to themselves and can't individually go on strike. They work together in the dozens, hundreds, sometimes thousands in their work sites, and the bosses rely on this collective labour to make the economy function. Workers' struggle can only proceed effectively through collective action. Solidarity and cooperation is a natural product of workers moving into struggle. Marx articulated that workers' position at the point of production didn't just mean that they could turn the system on or off, their position in production meant that they were responsible for all the world's productive labour, in other words, everything that is necessary to sustain human life is being produced every day by the working class. And with these workers already at a site of production, they're in a position to restart production and run it in the interests of the majority, not the minority of bosses. And we've seen that happen time and again in revolutionary periods and even shorter revolution, as a bunch of other sessions at this conference touches on. And this is the ultimate emancipatory core that Marxism uncovers. The working class, because of their position at the point of capitalist production, has the power to bring capitalism to its knees and to build a democratic alternative. Beneath capitalism's depravity, inequality, the material basis exists for the creation of a socialist society that abolishes the class divide and puts production in the collective democratic hands of the working class. I think the fact remains that this kind of society is the only thing that can solve the key disasters facing humanity. You could argue, though, I suppose, that Marxists are the ones that don't really care about action because they're just talking about some far-off revolution in the future. Change needs to happen right now. That's why we should donate to charity, do mutual aid, alter consumer habits, do things that can make change right now. I think the problem is that these things don't make any meaningful change. It affects little and leaves capitalist power structures unharmed. Capitalist power is what makes these problems in the first place, what reproduces them and what underlies their continuation. Decisions about how society works aren't made by individual moral choices, but in the context of an overall class compulsion of the ruling class and capitalist power. Society being divided into two classes, capitalists and workers, doesn't just mean workers are exploited and bosses are rich. It means all of society, under the control of the capitalist class, its ruling politicians, its state apparatuses that help maintain power, like the media, the police, so on, all of these institutions are always at war with the working class. Openly or no, class struggle is always being waged in one direction or another. And individual actions of change can't be disconnected from this. And I think that any individual action has broader political implications when looked in the context of its social whole. For example, take an example of donating to charity or changing someone's ideas about something. You as an individual go out and you might donate to something, you might talk to someone about their ideas, and then, okay, there's an outcome, right? On an immediate level, on a surface level, it looks like something has been achieved and that a kind of change has been made. But that's not really, I think, all that's going on there. There isn't just an interaction between these individuals. Regardless of the intentions behind these actions, a class structure is still trundling along in the background. In the context of this broader society, I think what individualized activity does is reinforce political ideas that actually help capitalism run. It says that change belongs in the domain of enlightened individuals, that your role is as an individual advocate, and it can end up legitimizing the state, the media, and the parliament as the places for this change to happen. And I think it disempowers people, disconnects them, and can alienate them in the face of capitalist power. Regardless of the intention of individual actions guided by moral choices, individualized methods of change are ineffective and acceptable to capitalism because they leave the core of capitalist power untouched. Because whatever the intention of individualized methods of change, a class-divided society is still going on in the background. The more that the working class is not being politicized, organized, cohered, imbued with the confidence to resist, the easier it is for the capitalist class to rule. So what does this mean for Marxists today? Because talking about class power doesn't mean that we think we can just conjure a revolution tomorrow. We know that we can't. But our activity is guided by seeing workers' revolution and controllers' reduction as our overarching project and our overarching goal. And that means being committed to activity that will help build the strength, the confidence, and the power of the working class. So if the effects of individualized activity and strategies for change can be to make people feel that they individually are the only people that can do things for change, for socialists, what we're trying to do is fight most stridently for reforms in the here and now, and let's look at the effects that these have. Let's look at the broader political effects this has in the context of a class-divided society, right? The more that you have strikes, the more that you have protests, the more that we are involved in political activity in the here and now and radical political education, there, I think this means that some broader things are going on, right? Protests can help reduce the repressive power of the state. We fight against anti-protest laws, against anti-strike laws. Protest strikes and mass movements can help raise people's expectations of dignity, of how they're treated by society. It can raise people's sense of social solidarity. And it can imbue people with confidence, and I think that's a really important thing, and it's something that builds the collective power of the class. So liberal approaches build a trend towards liberal individualism and strengthening capitalism. Marxism builds up class politics, that is, trying to strengthen through our activity political organisation and build a class approach, and that can ultimately have major impacts in times of struggle and is the only thing that can build a society worth living in. And so we want individuals to come out of this conference and not just be individually convinced of a few different positions and feel individually enlightened. We want individuals to come out of this conference to be committed fighters and rebels and be one to the overarching project of seeing working class power as the only thing that can solve capitalism's problems. That's why we're socialists, we're fighters, and we're rebels today and are constantly educating ourselves in Marxist theory and ideas. Because we see all of that as vital steps in building what can actually truly fight capitalism's injustices, and that is rebuilding the strength and political organisation of the working class so that they can take power themselves. The bigger and more powerful the system becomes, the more the majority of humanity and the planet we depend on will suffer. The only way we can stop all of that is by taking democratic control over what's making that happen in the first place, that is the economy. And so I think it's necessary to break down the debilitating and mystifying ideas of liberalism in which the self is seen as the most important thing. Marxism means seeing something bigger than yourself, seeing a project that's bigger than yourself, and seeing you in the context of a social whole. Only through the collective and successful struggle of the working class can we build a society where all individuals have the chance to flourish. And only when individuals now commit to a struggle greater than themselves to build working class power can that society be achieved one day.